You're now listening to Real Estate Journeys with Matthew Baltzell.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? This is your boy, Matty B, a.k.a. Matthew Baltzell, and welcome back to Real Estate Journeys, the exclusive podcast for new real estate investors looking to grow their brand and their business. So, guys, I know we've had an episode on this before as far as networking and kind of helping you develop your networking, getting it bigger and bigger and bigger, and having a circle of influence. And I know how important it is, and I've created a podcast in order to help expand my network as well. But today's guest is going to help us solve this very problem. His name is Travis Chappell, and Travis is a direct sales expert, podcaster, real estate investor, and super connector, creator, and the host of Build Your Network, a podcast dedicated to helping professionals cultivate genuine relationships, grow their inner circle, and leverage a powerful network the right way. With that said, I'd like to welcome Travis to the show.
Hey, what's up, bro? Thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here. Travis, can you, for those people that aren't too familiar with you, could you give us a little bit about your real estate background and why you decided to start your podcast and how to grow your circle of network?
I guess I've really been in real estate my entire life, basically, because my dad was a real estate agent growing up. So, I mean, I was walking properties on Saturdays when I was like nine, you know what I mean? Like, just kind of walking around with my dad, looking at houses and things. And so I got into my first investment when I was like 18, but I don't really count that as my first one because it was more like I didn't really have anything to do with the deal. Like, my parents found the deal for me and my sister and then basically just used our money to buy the deal. So like, we had saved up money from growing up and put it into an account and basically used that money. They took our money, bought the property with it and stuff. So that was technically my first one, but I don't really count that as my first deal, obviously, because I didn't really do anything. A couple of years later, I got married super young. I was 21. And when we moved, I wanted to buy a house instead of rent. And I didn't know a ton about real estate, but I knew probably more than most people my age just because I grew up in it. And I knew that the market was on its way up and probably not slowing down anytime soon. And so I wanted to kind of house hack our first investment. And we ended up buying a foreclosure, moving in and like fixing it while we lived there, sold it a year later, and then did that one more time. And then also invested a couple times with my mom and dad when they were looking at a couple different things. And then last year, we really did a little bit more flipping and did, I think, 4 active flips last year. Recently just sold off basically all of our properties, actually closed escrow on our last one like a couple weeks ago. So we are actually, for the first time since in my adult life, like real estate lists, meaning that we don't have any rentals or anybody. Oh, no, I take that back. We do have one rental. It's out in Dallas. But yeah, other than that, we're basically out of all our other ones.
When you were going into the first duplex, were you planning on selling it a year later, or were you thinking more long-term, or how are you going about playing that?
So it was a single family residence. It wasn't a duplex. I just say house hacking because I feel like if you're buying a house not for long term and you're buying it for the purpose of selling it, you know, in a little while, then I think that's kind of a house hack because you're just living there, renovating it, fixing it up while you live there. And you're able to obviously take advantage of the 3.5% down payment instead of the 20 to 30% down payment. So that's kind of what I meant by that. But yeah, I wasn't like 100% focused that we were going to sell it that soon. Mm-hmm. But basically what ended up happening is we just wanted to live in a different part of town. And so it was either like at the time we couldn't afford to buy a new house if we did not sell that house. So even though I kind of wanted to keep it, which, I wish I could have kept it, we wanted to get into a new place as well. So we didn't end up keeping that one. We sold it so that we could get a little bit bigger place with a little bit bigger backyard and stuff like that on the outskirts of town.
Mm. You said the property that you have right now is in Dallas?
Yes. Yep.
And you're currently in California, is that correct?
Vegas, actually.
Vegas. Okay.
Yeah.
So how did you make the jump into a different market, into a different state? Most people would say they kind of feel hesitant or they feel like they have to invest in their backyard. what made you feel so confident investing in a property in a different state?
Yeah. So, I mean, the hesitancy is merited. We meant to flip the property, but because we didn't know enough about the market, we ended up not being able to sell it for what we wanted it for. So we just turned it into a rental property. So I think there is a good reason for people to hesitate on that. But I also don't think that it should prevent you from ever taking the risk, because the next property that we do buy in Dallas, we'll have a lot better idea of what to buy. And if it's a good emerging market that, you know, you want to be in, then you're just going to have to get started sooner or later and not really care about like, well, am I going to, you know, make a mistake on this, because chances are you're going to. So I just did my best after we made that mistake to find a few people out there that I trusted a lot more than the people that we dealt with originally, to give us like better opinions and better options the next time around. But it wouldn't prevent us from going out there again. It just, you know, makes us better at it when we wanted to get into that market to begin with anyway.
And why did you go about choosing the Dallas market as opposed to maybe, I'll say, a state closer like Phoenix or going to Vegas or something along those lines? Why did you particularly choose Dallas?
You know, it was really just a couple of things. Number one, we had a guy out there that was sending us a decent amount of deals. And then also my wife and I are interested in moving to Dallas in the next like couple of years. So it was kind of a way to like get into the market, start learning about different areas surrounding Dallas, see what areas might be good or bad to live at, you know. And so ended up just kind of like out there one time doing a couple of podcast interviews, and then ended up looking at a couple of properties, and we just figured, hey, why not pull the trigger? And we ended up pulling the trigger on one.
Nice. And then moving forward with real estate, how do you see your investments playing out?
Yeah. So right now we're not really doing a bunch of fix and flips. Mm-hmm. Right now, really what the majority of my investing is going into like my business, just because I feel like right now I'm hitting some good momentum with that, and I want to like keep the energy headed in the right direction with that. Mm-hmm. In terms of real estate though, it'd probably just be more not quite commercial deals. So maybe more like fourplexes and stuff like that. And the only way I would do it is if I could put the money into it and then refinance and get, you know, a chunk of change back out of it, and then keep doing that, the kind of the Burr method that they talk about in Bigger Pockets a lot. Mm-hmm. That would be really the only thing that I'd be interested in doing at this current moment.
Very cool. And so when did you go about, when you're starting to do all this, you're graduating college or you're house hacking, and now when did you start to build your podcast?
Yeah, that was August of 2017 that I launched. So not too long ago, actually.
Okay, so you're coming up on your 2-year mark here.
Coming up on 2 years, yeah, man. Pretty,
congratulations.
Pretty quickly. Thank you very much. It's been a lot of fun. It's coming up on 300 episodes as well. So it's just been like cranking out content since we started.
That's great. And how did you go about starting your podcast and going about developing a network?
Yeah, I basically, when I'm committed to learning something, I want to learn it from the best. And so when I wanted to get into podcasting, I was like, I want to go learn from the best. And so I paid to get in front of a legend in the space and learn from him. And that was John Lee Dumas, runs a show called Entrepreneur on Fire.
Had him on the show.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Yeah. So yeah, he's been, you know, a really good mentor, friend of mine since I started my show. And I feel like if you really, that's the whole premise of my show is like, if you can get in and rub shoulders with the top 1% of your industry, you can eventually become the top 1% of your industry. I just think that people don't take it seriously enough, and they don't see the merit in.
You're talking about podcasting, correct?
In any industry that you're in, okay. Like if you want to learn real estate better, if you get around the top performers in real estate, you're going to be better at, you know, selling real estate or investing real estate, whatever you're trying to do. I think that goes for any industry that you're in. If you want to be a best-selling author, you should probably go spend a bunch of time with a bunch of best-selling authors and see what they did to get there. You know what I mean? If somebody's done it, you can do it, but it's just a much faster way to figure it out if you just go spend time with the people who've done it instead of trying to go figure it out yourself.
Mm. So people that are hearing this, how would they go about, I've seen the guests on your show and they're very impressive. How would somebody go about rubbing shoulders with, we'll say 1% of the people in their industry, or if they're thinking about starting a podcast or a platform, how would you recommend that they go about rubbing elbows with somebody like that?
Yeah. So first of all, thanks for tuning into the show. Thanks for listening to some of the guests and stuff. Really appreciate that. It's really just a matter of how important is it to you? Like, how committed are you to getting that done? Because for me, like, my podcast wasn't just a podcast from the beginning. Like, it was a business from the beginning. And although it didn't pay me at first, it pays me now. And now it's what I do full time. And I get to travel around and make my own schedule and have the freedom to spend time with my family, do what I want. And it's like a, you know, dream situation for me. But it didn't start out that way. It started out with me investing tens of thousands of dollars in coaching and mentorship and masterminds and getting to know people, like paying for access to some of these circles, and then just like figuring out ways to add value to the people in those circles, taking opportunities that came my way, even though they weren't always super attractive. Like, it's really just about putting in the work. And if you can put in the work, you can get there. It's just that I don't think a lot of people are super committed to making it happen. Mm. Like, they just don't have that commitment level. You know, it's like, well, I really want to talk to all the best people out there. And it's like, okay, what's your budget for your podcast? And it's like, well, I don't want to spend any money on it. It's like, okay, well, then you're probably going to get the results that not spending money on a show gets you. You know, like, if you want a business, then you got to treat it like a business. If you want, you know, a hobby, then treat it like a hobby, and you're going to get hobby like results. You know what I mean? Like, if you put in hobby like effort, then that's the results you're going to get. If you put in business like effort, then that's the results you're going to get. So, like, I was always willing to kind of put my money where my mouth was and invest into a few key relationships and bust into some of those circles and get access to people, and not just on a, like, hey, let's have a 10-minute call access, but like, hey, can I, like, we're friends now, I can text you whenever and get feedback and advice from you type access. And I think that there's a really big differentiation there.
Mm. Is that the main platform that you use, is podcasting? Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm on a lot of different social, and I'm pretty active on Instagram, and I got,
yeah, I saw that.
A pretty engaged Facebook group of like almost 1,000 people now. And it's pretty engaged group over there. Decent following over on Instagram. I'm getting more into LinkedIn and Twitter, trying to figure those out a little bit. I just started onto YouTube last week, but yeah, the main thing would be podcasting for sure.
Very cool. When you were starting podcasting, did you initially just start your podcast and then you're like, I'm going to seek coaching? Or did you muddle around for 3 or 4 months and say, you know what, I need to reach out and get some real coaching or look for some mentors in this industry? What was your mindset at that point?
Yeah. So when I first decided to do the show, it was like October of 2016. But at the time, I wasn't like prepared to make the commitment. I was still really scared to jump into it, scared to, like, you know, commit to something and not be successful with it, scared to fail, like all the different fears that come across everybody's minds definitely came across my mind. And so I put it off. And then probably February, so 4 or 5 months later, I finally reached out. I hired a coach. And then in May is when I paid to go to a weekend mastermind at John Lee Dumas's house. And then I launched the show in August. So it was almost a full year from the time that I knew I was going to start a show until I actually launched the show.
Oh, okay. So you basically took about a year, right? You're saying a year before you launched?
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I tell people, like, you just got to start, man. Like, that's like my biggest regret. If I was started 10 months earlier, I would have 10 months more experience. I would have 10 months more content. I would have 10 months more downloads. I'd be 10 months further ahead in my journey if I would have just started when I, you know, wanted to actually start. And sure, like, maybe give it, maybe let's say 7 months, because I think a solid pre-launch time frame is a good 3 months. You don't want to just launch with nothing and get it out there. Like, you do want to do it the right way. So let's say 7 months, but that's still 7 months ahead of where I am right now. And 7 months ahead of where I am right now, I think, is a really big jump, because I feel like in 7 months, I'll be significantly ahead of where I am right now. So yeah, I just got to kind of get started and don't let that imposter syndrome creep in.
Mm. And when you're, once you launched and you start reaching out to folks, how were you going about doing that? Were you just emailing them? Were you using LinkedIn? Were you doing Instagram? Were you tweeting them? How were you going about getting in contact and finding these people's information that you wanted to be rubbing elbows with?
Yeah, so however I could, but it was mainly like emails, it was intros from other people, and it was Instagram mostly, and then a little bit of Facebook.
Instagram?
Yep. Yeah, Instagram is my secret weapon, bro. Instagram is a secret weapon. you can DM anybody.
What do you say to people? You're just like, hey, it's me.
Yeah.
Travis. It took me a year to get this show up, and I have it. Yeah. Like, would you like to be on?
So I actually have an entire script, because it's actually a little bit more in depth for us to go into, like on a short interview like this. But
yeah,
if you and your listeners, everybody, it's totally free. It's just called Meet Your Hero. It's a quick training that I put together on how to like reach out to people cold. But you can find that at travischappell.com/hero. Again, totally free. You can go check that out. And it gives you like exact, like downloadable templates for email and Instagram messages that I used to send people that I still use to send to people and get them on the show and stuff. So yeah, you can just find that at travischappell.com/hero. It's an entire training on how to do that. Totally free.
Mm. Yeah. I'll definitely include that into the show notes. I think it's interesting that, I mean, you can obviously attest to this, that once you have a platform and you reach out to somebody that's, let's say, you think may never respond to you, how quick they actually may respond to you and do your show. Like, you might, you know, just say, I'm just going to shoot this guy a message. I'm not thinking anything of it. And then he books within the hour.
Yeah, right.
Like, whoa. Yep. I didn't know. Whoa. Like, all right. Now I have to step my game.
Yeah.
Up. Whoa,
right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. So very cool. So what's your plan as far as the future is concerned for your podcast and moving forward?
Yeah, I got a lot of different ideas and plans coming off of it. The next thing in just like short-term plans, the next thing is a live event that I'm hosting out here in Vegas in November. So I'd love you or any of your audience members to come out for that. It'll be a really, really good time. Should be a couple hundred people there, going for 150 first, and kind of see like how quickly we can get that sold out. But yeah, it'll be out here in November in Vegas, and have a few people that have, you know, been on the podcast before that are lined up for speakers already before I even confirm the dates and the location. They already said that they're in. And so once we get the dates and location set, then we'll get the other speakers set and we'll start announcing a lot of those things coming out. So that's one of the big things that I'm really excited for coming up. But long term, it's more of that kind of stuff leading to eventually, like, I really want to write a book in the next year or two and different things like that. But ultimately for me, it's not just about having a podcast. It's about having
a circle of influence.
Yeah. It's about like really building up a platform, because I think if you have a good enough platform that you can basically launch whatever you would like to launch. And as long as it adds value and continues to serve the people that follow you, then you're going to be able to be successful with it. And so I would like to launch like a software company and eventually a real estate fund of sorts and like a couple different things like that. But I think that if I spend enough time building real value and giving away so much free stuff to people, that I think that, you know, people really respond well to that kind of thing. And so that's really more my long-term goal. It's not just the podcast. It's more what it brings. You know, it brings you the freedom and the opportunity to help people on such an easier level without having to spend insane amounts of money in marketing.
Mm. And the 150 person event that you're talking about, is that going to be more of a like a networking event?
Yeah, so it'll be like a regular business event, except for that it'll be more connection focused.
Okay.
So whenever I go to an event, there's so much content that I think that they take away from your ability to connect with all the other people, which is the only reason, in my opinion, to really go to the event, because every speaker delivers content online. Like, pretty much any speaker that's going to be there, you can find a book, a podcast, an article, a blog, something where you can listen or read or watch even their content, like on YouTube. Like you can find all the information somewhere online.
Yeah.
But what you can't find is the in-person connection with all the other people that are at the event. And so my event will be a little bit more focused on the connection, and we'll have a couple like more guided connecting activities instead of just like content all day.
You're saying guided as in with the guest speakers, is that correct?
So if you, for the VIP ticket holders, yeah, they'll have access to the guest speakers.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I feel as though, like, you know, a lot of people that go to these bigger events, like you're saying, their content is online and people aren't necessarily networking as much, or like you're saying, like that's where the true value is, meeting other people.
Yep.
But if you're not doing that, then you're kind of paying for an expensive ticket to see a live broadcast.
Exactly.
I guess you can say.
Exactly. And I mean, the content, you know, is always good, But like I always tell people, like leave with three pieces of content, like three actionable things that you can do. Like all these people that leave these events with like 40 pages of notes, it's just overwhelming. Mm. There's too much. You can't, like, it's good to take notes because you remember more, and like what you get, what you put in, you get more of. So if you're constantly filling your brain with things and like reassuring those things by writing it down, like you're obviously going to learn more and get better over time. But in terms of like actually like actionable things that you can implement to your business, you can only leave an event with, you know, 2-3 things max that you want to actually be able to put into your business soon. So the rest of your time should be focused on getting to know people, in my opinion.
Yeah. I read something that said once that for every book you read, you only remember 4 things from the book.
Yeah, I believe it.
And I thought about that. And I was like, okay, like what was the book I read last week? And then I'm like, okay, that 3, 2. I was like, oh my God, I only remember 2 things, really. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like really, really things to take from it. So I think that's very important for people to hear is, you know, like I'm one of those people too. It's, you know, when you're going to an event or something, or you're sitting down in a class and you've been in there for a whole semester and you're like, I don't even know what I just learned, but I can remember like this premise about the business aspect. Like this is the key takeaway, you know, the key takeaway, right? And I think a lot of people forget that, and I think it's important that you reiterated that. So that's very cool. Well, very cool. I feel like you added a lot of value. I want to close it out with the final 3 questions we have. First question is, what is your favorite book to regift?
You know, recently it's been Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. Mm. Yeah, it's a book.
The FBI hostage negotiator?
Yep. Yeah. He's, you know, best book on negotiation / like persuasion and sales that, you know, that I've ever read. Really, it's definitely top 3 for sure. It's just super practical. And Chris is a good dude. He came on the show recently. His episode's gotten just a lot of traction. People loved some of the tips and tricks that we went over on that particular episode. So I try to push his book whenever I can.
Yeah, he's got a very interesting story, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
Very cool. Second question is, if you were to give a TEDx talk, what would it be on and why?
It would be on the importance of adding value, because I think that if you can get in and add value to anybody, that you can create influence and build a relationship with that person.
Very cool. Third question, what is a pain point or a weakness you face right now in your business?
Probably marketing. I'm not a great marketer. I come from a door-to-door sales background and stuff like that. So I don't have a problem negotiating one-on-one and talking with people one-on-one and selling stuff and all that kind of thing. And then the podcast is a form of marketing, and it's like content relationship marketing. And I feel like I've gotten a lot better with content relationship marketing. But in terms of like paid advertising and different things like that, that's definitely not my wheelhouse.
Mm. Very cool. Yeah, the reason why I asked that question is because if somebody's hearing this, right, and they're a marketing expert, like I want them to help you and add value to you. And a lot of people that don't necessarily say what their pain points are, if people don't say it, then how do they expect people to help them? So that's very cool.
Exactly. We all got them.
All right. So what is the best way to get a hold of you, Travis, if somebody wants to get a hold of you? Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter?
Yeah, shoot me a DM on Instagram. I'll always respond over on Instagram. So at Travis Chappell, Chappell, over on Instagram. Shoot me a DM. We'll chat over there.
Very cool. All right, guys. Well, I'll include the link to the show notes for the 5 questions for your template. Is that correct?
Yeah. TravisChappell.com/hero. You can go over there. Or you can just find it really easily at meyourherocourse.com. But either one of those leads you to the same place. And yeah, you can sign up for free and get access to those. I think there's 6 video modules in there. So, but yeah, it'll break down, give you my like template downloads, like everything.
Very cool. All right, Travis. Well, thank you very much for being on the show. I'll include all that information in the show notes, and we'll catch you on the next go round, my friend.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Real Estate Journeys, guys. Your support is greatly appreciated. And if you found this content to be enjoyable, valuable, or entertaining in any way, please head on over to iTunes, subscribe, leave a comment, and a 5-star review. Peace.